Say goodbye to your credit card rewards. Greedy corporate mega stores, led by Walmart and Target, are pushing for a law in Congress to take away your hard-earned cash back and travel points to line their pockets. The Durbin-Marshall credit card bill would enact harmful credit card routing mandates that would end credit card rewards as we know it. If you love your credit card rewards, tell your lawmakers, hands off my rewards. Tell them to oppose the Durbin-Marshall credit card bill.
Without the ones like you, who work tirelessly to keep things running, everything would suddenly stop. Hospitals, factories, schools, and power plants, they all depend on you. No matter the weather, emergency, or time of day, you're the ones who get it done. At Grainger, we're here for you, with professional-grade industrial supplies. Count on real-time product availability and fast delivery. Call, clickgrainger.com or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
Welcome you to Porch Talk. This is your host, Alan, and I've got a very interesting guest with me today. He hails from across the pond, and he's over here trying to catch some stories about Columbus. How you doing, Jack?
I'm good. How are you, Alan?
Good, man. So, this ain't your first rodeo in America, right?
That's right, yeah.
So, the first time you're here, tell me a little bit about what'd you do and what brought you over here?
First time I came, so I'd been here a couple of times before, you know, big tourist spots, New York, LA, and I'd always just had more of an interest in Middle America and smaller places and smaller communities. So I was probably about 25. I did a road trip cross country, Miami to LA through the South.
Nice.
Yeah. And I just fell in love with it.
Uh-huh.
And the people and, you know, just rolling into a small town and pitching up in a local bar and talking to people.
Mm-hmm.
And it's just fed this hunger ever since to come back and do that as often as I can.
Yeah. And now you're back. So that first time you was riding like Amtraks, right?
So yeah, that was that was this year. That was Amtrak across the North. That first time I went through was driving through the South.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
And that the Amtrak is when you did your first podcast, right?
Amtrak was the first podcast earlier this year, and that was, you know, through the prairies, middle of January, February, freezing.
Yeah.
Just stopping in little towns and talking to people about their lives.
So, like, what did that look like? You were just interviewing people on the train?
So, I wish I could have done more of that. One of my favorite episodes was on the train, a guy called Matt. We just struck up a conversation, and I asked if I could record it. It was so meaningful and heartfelt, but...
Yeah.
That's
kind of interesting too, because you ain't got nowhere else to be, you know, till you get to your destination.
Yeah, and it's funny how on the Amtrak the whole vibe changes over the course of the day, because you kind of wake up and you have your breakfast and you sit in the observation car, and it's kind of a lot of families and they're playing cards and they're just looking out the window, and then when after dark, you know, people just start drinking and chatting, and it just turns into a kind of party vibe. People all spilling their guts to each other, and yeah, that was great. But no, largely I was couch surfing. You know, it's a way to do it cheaply and meet people and stay with locals. And I would just interview the couch surfing hosts I had.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And you got back, and that podcast won an award, didn't it?
It was nominated for one, yeah. British Podcast Awards, Best New Podcast, which was crazy. I mean, I was very flattered, but I just thought, God, I want to make more of this. You know, I love talking to people and wanted to find a way to come back, and, you know, traveling is expensive. And so started looking at ways to do it where I wouldn't have to pay somewhere and to stay somewhere. And so I looked at house sitting.
Yeah.
And landed on Columbus, 6 weeks.
Man, of all the places, right?
Right, yeah.
So what do you make of Columbus, man? The friendly city.
The friendly city. Well, it lives up to the name.
Yeah, we were talking a little bit before about misconceptions.
Definitely.
Yeah. But, I mean, I grew up just across the state line, and when we got our driver's license, you had two options. You could go to Tuscaloosa, but Jason Isbell, he has a song called Speed Trap Town. Mm-hmm. And that was the reason why we didn't go to Tuscaloosa, because there was a speed trap town named Gordo. And so if you were a teenager going to and from my hometown to Tuscaloosa, you were probably going to get pulled over or go through a roadblock or, you know, just unwanted trouble. Hmm. So we would hang out in Columbus. And, what did you say that one guy told you? He said, you better bring your gun down?
Yeah, I was at a bar 15, 20 minutes up the road yesterday. And, they were really talking down on it. And I found it's been really nice, welcoming. Yeah. That's true of everywhere. You know, that's part of what I'm trying to do with this series being here is I feel like a lot of people, they have an idea of what they think Mississippi is, or even the South if they've just never been to the South, and it's often unflattering and it's often unfair, and so I want to look at that and talk to people and interrogate it and
get to the bottom of it. That's the same thing with some of the blues musicians that I've interviewed and had on the show, and that was one thing that I wanted to be real careful about, is I wanted not to come in with any ideas or what I thought. I wanted them to tell the story and set the record straight themselves, and you know, because they're not going to be around forever, and then all you'll have is what people say, and oftentimes it isn't true, you know.
Yeah.
So.
It's great. It's amazing what you're doing. It's what is it? 400 over 400 episodes.
This would be 416.
416. Wow.
It's about I've been doing it a little over 4 years now, and typically I average about 100 episodes a year.
Wow.
And we're trying, we're working hard to start making more content, and maybe 3 to 4 a week. Up in the ante.
Man, I really admire it. It's very cool.
It's kind of the same thing that what you're trying to accomplish, because I will take Skype calls. I've talked to a guy from South Africa. I've talked to people from New York, California, just all over Texas. But I really do like the in-person sit-downs just like this and go where they are and kind of just hang out.
Yeah, just hang out.
Just have a chat.
Yeah. How far do you go? Sorry, I'm asking you questions.
No, it's fine. We'll do a little cross-examination. But I've driven 4 hours to do a podcast.
Okay.
I drove down to the coast a couple times. Those were some this was during the pandemic, and so there were a couple of singer-songwriters and bands down in Mobile that I wanted to make sure I got on the show. The Rick Lay Strays and my friend Dave Partridge.
Right, okay.
And it's like, this show does focus a whole lot on music, and like, I've done a lot of work in Birmingham, Alabama. I probably interviewed close to 20 musicians. And I was like, that has to about cover it. I ain't even halfway there, you know? So much work to do. And that's kind of my thing, is like, I'm trying to give everyone an idea of what Birmingham or what Columbus sounds like or Starkville sounds like.
Yeah.
Talk to the business owners and like, what's this place all about?
Yeah.
But that's kind of like what you're doing. And I do enjoy those podcasts like This American Life.
Yeah.
I knew one of the towns that they did. One of the popular ones is called S-Town.
Right, yes.
It's about Woodstock. And so Woodstock is not far from Tuscaloosa. And a lot of people knew John B. and a lot of those characters in that podcast. And they was like, that guy from New York did not do a good job.
Really?
He made it sound like it was just a racist crap hole town. And it's not.
Yeah.
Maybe it used to be, but it's not that way anymore. And, you know, I don't know if you've listened to that podcast, but John B. is, that dude was crazy as a loon, you know?
Yeah. if you just interview those people, then you get a great story, but you don't get the full picture.
Right.
And it's funny, I found being here, even just being here a few weeks, I now have this feeling, like a sense of duty or a sense of obligation to Columbus to do it justice and to get the full picture. You know, I came and it was like, I just wanted to talk to different people, get some good stories, but you know, then I'll hear something from someone else, and I want to cover every part of it. And you're right. You know, it's very easy to just tell one version of the story, or tell a convenient version, or one that feeds people's, you know, preconceived ideas of it. And of course, not all of it is going to be great, but a lot of it, you know, is there is nuance to it.
Yeah, exactly. Like people that are outside of Columbus, and you know, they kind of speak negatively of it. And I mean, you're living right in the heart of it. And
yeah,
I don't understand where you're coming from.
Haven't been shot yet. So.
Yeah. Fingers crossed, right?
Yeah.
So, with what you're working on now, what all kind of type of people and stories are you trying to capture? You're talking to business owners, or
so it sort of started out that way. It was a good way to just meet people, just walk from store to store and just say hello and start a conversation. And you know, I have met people that way. I interviewed Emily in the bookstore and Fred in the antique store, and, mm-hmm. and what I like is seeing how they cross over as well. So, you know, like I bought this broken watch in the antique store, cracked glass and half a strap, and I thought, oh, I'll take it into the clock watch place on 5th and they can repair it, and then I might try and do an interview with them as well. Mm-hmm. Just see how people's lives kind of crisscross. Oh, yeah.
Yes, interesting.
Yeah.
How did you find out about Munson?
I think a couple of people had just told me about it. Mm-hmm. And might have been Fred had told me about it as well. So I went in and I spoke to Ryan. That was fun.
Mm-hmm.
But Munson seems to be, it's a real hub.
It is. There was a band from New Orleans. Mm. They came to town. They were playing a house show here. And the day they came to Columbus, they were a couple of days early, and they just asked some of the locals, where's the hub at? And everyone's like, go to Munson and Brothers.
Hmm.
That's where you need to go if you want to meet people.
Yeah. It's encouraging as well, because I feel like a lot of small towns are shrinking, and to see new places kind of opening up is mm-hmm. encouraging.
I'm sure you got into it with Munson, but that building, it used to be just an apothecary.
Mm.
Like some of his wares, like the oils and the balms.
Mm.
That was all there was.
Yeah.
And at one point, a church met in the back. And now you got a full pizzeria, you know, and a beer garden. It's kind of crazy how the business has grown.
It really has. It's great pizza, great people. Went and watched the World Cup there.
Oh, yeah, a lot of World Cup parties. You didn't come out to our storm party, did you?
No.
You were there for that?
No.
That's where I met Jordan.
Oh, really?
Okay. She came out that night.
Oh, that would have been fun. It's been my first storm, first tornado, so I took it super seriously.
Oh, yeah.
So I was...
Sirens going off.
My phone made a noise it never made before, and I was sheltering in the toilet.
Mm-hmm. I think that's the best place to be.
Yeah.
Just find yourself a room with no windows.
Yeah.
Yeah, growing up here, dude, it was the house I grew up in, it had a storm shelter. It was in the bank of a hill.
Wow.
And they dug it out, and you would just go sit in that hillside until it passed.
Wow. It's very sobering, just that you get this sense like nature is going to do what it wants to do, and you can't fight it, really.
Yeah. Yeah, y'all don't have like any kind of natural disaster kind of storms over there, do
No,
you?
It's made me feel very lucky. I mean, you know, we'll get the odd storm, kind of wind, fast winds and rain, but never tornadoes or earthquakes.
I think that is just specific to this part of the world, too.
Mm.
I don't really hear about it anywhere else.
Yeah, I don't know. I'm not sure.
And it's here, this part of the South, and then like Kansas and Oklahoma.
Right, so Midwest, yeah. Mm-hmm. It's interesting when you look at America, there's almost no part of it that doesn't have some kind of natural disaster.
You got hurricanes in the south.
Earthquakes, wildfires, you know, out west,
mm-hmm.
tornadoes, flooding, extreme heat, extreme cold.
Yeah. Pick your poison, right?
Yeah. It amazes me that anyone ever settled there, you know, before we had, you know, heating and trucks and all of this stuff to kind of handle it. Wild.
Yeah. So I thought last night we were going to have another storm, and it may be tonight, because like what it is, anytime you have this, it's unseasonably warm right now, and so you have the cold fronts up north pushing against this Gulf warm front,
mm-hmm.
and whenever they clash, here comes some severe weather. So you can about bank on it, but maybe not.
I was going to try and interview someone from the news station.
Oh, that would be good. WCBI?
Yeah.
Yeah, you should. I know a couple guys that work there.
because it was, yeah, it was like the sequence of events was like a movie. Because I was like, you know, I knew it was coming, but I was watching the weather, and then the news just cut out, just went off air. And I'm thinking, like, is it still there? Is the station still there? It's only three blocks away. Has it been blown away? You know, and then the sirens start going in, and the phone starts screeching this alert. And I was like, what the fuck is going on?
It's wild. In Alabama, a lot of people watch him here. He's based out of Birmingham. Mm. He's a meteorologist. His name is James Spann.
Right.
He wears suspenders.
Okay.
And if his suit jacket comes off, things are getting serious. If those suspenders come off, you better get somewhere.
Your shit's about to hit the fan.
But yeah, like, tell me a little bit about, like, growing up and where you're from.
Sure. So, I mean, I'm born and raised in London, England, and that's why people always seem to think, say, like, well, how did you end up here? Why would you want to come here? This must be so boring. And I don't know if it's just grass is greener if you grow up in a big city. You know, I certainly am drawn to smaller places. But, yeah, I grew up in a big city, and just maybe it was growing up on American culture.
Yeah.
But I always loved watching those films like, you know, Back to the Future, where it's like a small town where, you know, there's the courthouse and the square. And mm-hmm. and so whenever I arrive in a place like this, I feel like I'm in a movie.
I could see that.
And I don't know, the people are very, very friendly. But yeah, coming back to where I grew up. So I grew up in North London. Anyone that knows London, kind of most well-known place nearby would be Camden Town, which is kind of known for, you know, in the 70s and 80s, it was very alternative. Lots of punk music came out of there. And, you know, London will always be home. I love it. It's a great city. People should visit if they can. But, you know, I think I'm drawn to smaller places, really.
Yeah, just talking about that punk scene, growing up, like, I had an infatuation with just music that was coming from there, like, I always had a deep appreciation for that style of music, whether, you know, it was the Stones or the Ramones or, like, all of those guys. Like, I prefer, like, the UK music to United States music.
Really?
Yeah. And it seems like it's always vice versa, you know?
Yeah.
You always are really into something from where you're not.
I think, there's something in human psychology there. Whatever you're used to, you seek out the opposite.
And it's always funny, like, those time periods. It's like, you know, you take a band like the Rolling Stones, and then next thing you know, the United States is trying to come up with a band to compete with that, you
right.
know, and they're in qualms.
I always thought, like, obviously many, many years before my time, but people would have, I guess it'd be like Beatles or Beach Boys or Rolling Stones.
Yeah.
And for me, I always preferred the Beach Boys growing up, just because it's not what I knew.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's the singing about sunshine and girls and surfing and cars. That sounded more exciting to me than...
And that, I mean, that's a big conversation, like, here. And that's a big rivalry. It's like, is it the Beatles or the Beach Boys? Mm. And it's like, that's tough. I like them both.
Yeah, they're great.
They're both great.
They're both fantastic. I can't remember. Was it you I was talking about with Madness, or was that someone else?
Someone else.
Okay,
yeah, we can go there.
But they know, because they are from Camden, which is where I live at the moment. But that was the first band that I really, really loved.
Yeah.
Yeah. No, it's always funny that when you meet people and they'll pick up on something where you're from, and it's...
Kind of call you out on it.
Yeah.
You ever listen to this? Yeah, it's like, you know, just being in Mississippi. I mean, first thing that probably comes to mind is the blues.
Yeah, of course.
I'm curious about the history of it myself. I've got an interview coming up of the guy I'm going to interview. He's really into the Black Prairie music.
Hmm.
And that starts in central Alabama, and it runs over just south of here down in Meridian where it stops.
Hmm.
And he would make the claim that the Black Prairie in Alabama inspired the blues in Mississippi.
Hmm.
But I don't know, and that would be a very controversial take.
Yeah.
Because, you know, Mississippi gets up in arms about that. You know, whenever Chicago or Memphis tries to claim blues.
Yeah.
They'd be like, no. You can't have Elvis. Elvis is ours, and the blues is ours.
Yeah.
Y'all copied us.
That's funny. Well, no, I mean, I'd love to know an answer to that. You should look into it.
Yeah. I'm going to get after that cat.
Yeah.
So,
Go on.
Just with your stay, like, it's kind of funny. You've been out to Double D's and some of those outside
country bars, yeah. Which is not a strip club. Sounds like it is.
Yeah.
Just clarify that.
There is one in West Point.
A strip club.
Yeah, it's called The Pony.
Mm-hmm. I went there. I actually interviewed a stripper.
Nice.
For my show. which, great interview. Really great interview. Yeah. I don't want to give too much away on that one. But
yeah,
Double D's, that was a fun crowd.
I played out there one time.
Really?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. It's been years ago. A lot of fun. Those old country bars, I mean, they get a bad rap, I think, but like when you actually go out there, unless you're just looking for trouble, you're not going to find any, you know?
But it's funny, it's like the reverse of what we were talking about, people saying, oh, Columbus is really dangerous. Well, people from Columbus would say, why the hell are you going to go out there? There you're going to get a broken nose and hang out with a bunch of rednecks. And you show up there and they're totally nice and charming and buy you a beer and shoot the breeze.
Yeah. Kind of weird.
It's just that thing.
Everybody's just crapping on each other.
Yeah. Yeah, and then Johnny Kelly's last night, that was kind of similar vibe.
Yeah, I'd never heard of that.
Right, just at the edge of the highway.
Huh.
They had a band, it was a Christmas party or something. And
well, it had to be a fun night.
Yeah. Yeah, it was good. But I like those places, just you rock up and get talking to people and
we had something interesting happen last night, and I was talking to the bartender about it after it was all said and done, and she thought what had happened because, like, there was a guy at the bar on the patio last night who was just rubbing everyone raw, and there were some good old boys there that they were like, look, keep on running that mouth, we're gonna sock it to you, and I mean, he started talking crap back to them, and next thing you know, they're barking and getting ready to bite. And a few of us started working hard to, like, okay, let's chill out. Why don't you just leave? Why don't y'all let him leave? And so what it ended up doing is they were hiding around the corner just waiting for him to come out, and they were going to serve him up. So I'm talking to the bar owner sneaks him out the back to where there's no there's no confrontation. But in the midst of all of that, while we're standing outside, a police chase goes by. We got a high-speed chase and the risk of a fight. It's like, what more could you ask for in a fight? We got all the action.
Maybe the people were right that I was talking to. Maybe maybe I shouldn't be in Columbus.
But what the bartender was telling me, she's like, I think those cats came from Muddy Waters because I think on the weekends now, Muddy Waters started charging, I think, a $10 cover, and you had to be 25 to enter. Mm-hmm. And those were younger guys. And so I'm wondering, you know, the Princess crowd and the Muddy Water crowd, they don't mix too well.
Interesting that. What is it? Because I've been to Muddy Waters and I've been to the Princess. And
it's just a different, it's kind of a different group of people, I would say, you know, from the same place. They're doing the same thing, but you can't put them in the same room.
Wow. Yeah, I went and played beer pong at Muddy Waters.
Uh-huh. Yeah, they like that out there.
That was, it was an experience. For sure.
That was the thing. The older I get, the worse I get at it. Like, back when, getting out of high school and back in, like, the college days, we thought we were the greatest. Mm. Now, I don't think I could make a cup.
Because that's not an English thing. We don't have that.
Oh, yeah,
though? So that was like a fun new experience. And
what kind of games do y'all play over there?
Drinking game. God, it's been so long since I've played drinking games, but I can't even remember what they would be now. Just the one where you end up mixing everyone else's drinks. It's like horrible. Like people put whatever they're drinking into a cup and then you lose and you have to drink whatever's there.
Ooh,
and it's
just horrible.
It'll be a mixture of beer and vodka and whiskey. It's horrible. But no, Muddy Waters I did like, because at least, I mean, I like bourbon. I'm a big bourbon guy, and they don't have spirits in The Princess. Mm-hmm. Much as I love The Princess, every now and then I want a whiskey.
Yeah. Yeah, that is, like, I do like to go down to Zachary's or Muddy Waters sometimes. I like to have an old-fashioned.
Mm. Oh, yeah, love an old-fashioned.
And, I mean, the Princess used to have a liquor license. It was right before the pandemic. That building was leased out to a church. Mm. And 6 months ago, it's the Princess again. And so I don't know, because in Mississippi, if you're going to serve spirits, you have to have a kitchen. You have to serve food.
Really?
And I don't think Bart has any interest in it.
I wonder why that is.
I don't think, I think it's the, maybe the crowd it draws, and he didn't want to deal with all the problems.
No, I was just wondering, why do you have to have a kitchen to serve spirits?
Oh.
I wonder if it's like intended so that at least you're eating food that you're soaking up the booze or not.
You know, maybe that's the intention outside looking in, but I think it's like just trying to be hard on businesses and things.
Yeah. That's funny, I guess. Because
there was a bar, it's the Tavern now, it's owned by Zachary's. Mm. That used to be a dive bar. It was called the Elbow Room. Mm. And that's literally all it was.
Right.
You get in there on like a Friday or Saturday night, and they would do a punk show. All you would just be elbow to elbow. And they fought for a long time trying to get their liquor license, but they never could get the food part going.
Wow. Yeah. It's interesting, the idea of the Princess turning into a church. Because also, when you're someone that has so many churches, someone said it's like 100 churches for 20,000 people. It's quite ballsy to open another one.
Yeah.
I mean, how can you know that you're going to attract a congregation? I don't know.
They were, I want to say they had that space for a little over 2, maybe 3 years.
Mm.
I don't know how successful it was. It never made sense to me. You know, like, I wouldn't want to have a place of worship where, you know, people were used to be drinking and everything else.
I mean, I'm guessing it can't have been if it's not there anymore. I mean.
Right. Yeah. True.
Yeah.
But that's the interesting thing about just like American Christianity. Like, you know, we have Catholicism, and then you have evangelicals, and that's like Baptists, Methodists, and Lutherans, and I mean, list just goes on, and now we're at a point to where, like, that was a non-denominational church.
Right.
And so that's the kind of the new thing, and I guess maybe it was real hip to be renting out the used-to-be bar in town. I mean, I don't know what the drive was.
Yeah.
Kind of crazy.
Wow. Yeah. Man, it's pretty amazing just listening to the rain sitting out here.
Yeah.
I do love the sound of rain.
It's a good setup, too. I mean, she's got a lot of foliage out here. Mm. Kind of get to hear it hitting all the leaves and all.
Yeah.
It's a lot of, and I'm sure you've seen some of it, just taking walks in the evenings, but, I mean, there's some fascinating antebellum homes around here.
Yeah. I mean, I love the whole porch culture. And I found that even walking, you can walk from the nicest street into a much poorer part of town. And the houses, they all pretty much all have some kind of porch. Mm-hmm. From the biggest, grandest antebellum mansion down to what is almost a shack. And it's like, it's very social. Mm-hmm. And I kind of would love to be here in the spring or the autumn where people are sitting out a little more. Because you just walk by and people, they just wave at you and...
Uh-huh. That's a big part of why this show's called Porch Talk.
Yeah.
It's kind of buying into that culture, right?
Yeah.
How did it start?
Yeah.
When I moved back from Mobile, the coast, I was catching up with friends that I had grown up with that I hadn't seen in 6 years.
Mm.
And we were on a porch, and, you know, we would bring a guitar or a keyboard out, and we would share, you know, whatever we'd been working on. And, you know, next thing I know, I was like, I had just got into listening to the podcast, and I was like, I don't think anything like this exists, because you sit outside on a nice day like today, you got a little rain in the background, it kind of makes you feel like you're there, and then put a little music at the end, and let it go.
Yeah.
And you got an episode.
Oh, it's crazy.
And we're just catching up, shooting the bull, and This is what the Columbus, Mississippi sounded like on December 11th in 2022.
Yeah, it's very cool. It's a cool project and a nice way of doing it.
Yeah. So I wanted to make it feel like the South, you know. Because, I mean, like you said, and I like the premise. I think this was like one of the premises that you gave me for the project that you're working on now. It's whenever someone, you know, thinks about America or is wanting to come and visit, it's always Los Angeles or New York. Why not Columbus? Why not, you know, why not a smaller town or somewhere people don't typically go?
Yeah.
I would argue maybe because you don't know about it.
Probably, yeah. Partly that. But I think partly is people do have a idea of what they think it is based on stereotypes or expectation or things they've read. But, you know, that might deter a lot of people from coming, and you know,
it's very interesting. Of when I get to talking to people like from the North with like their preconceptions of the dirty, racist South, and then they get down here and they realize it's, yeah, I mean, there's some, but it's not as bad as what you would think, and it's not that apparent, you know.
Yeah, it's true.
But I think it's that same idea that we've been kind of back and forth on during this conversation. It's like people outside of Columbus kind of crap on it, and people in Columbus kind of crap on anything else.
Yeah, yeah. Have you ever lived in the North? Have you always been south?
I haven't, but I have I have relatives from Michigan and Oregon, and I have friends from Buffalo, New York, and we'll call and chat, or they'll come down to visit. And, like, the first time my cousins from Oregon came down, I don't know if they were messing with me, but they was like, oh, I didn't know y'all wore shoes down here. Like, it's the 2000. Yes, we have shoes.
That's what everyone says when I'm starting each interview I do by just saying, what do you think people that have never been here imagine? And they always say that we're running around without shoes. And I didn't even think that was a stereotype. Like, they might say racist, they might say, you know, whatever, but that was not the stereotype I was expecting. It's hilarious.
No shoes.
Yeah.
And I'll tell you something else, like, friends up north, like in Michigan, will laugh at us when it gets cold, like in late January or February. And if the roads get a little icy, we don't have the equipment that they have. Right. We don't have like the salt trucks. Yeah. We can't clear our roads like that. And so, I mean, it's a slip and slide, man. Yeah. Trying to get to work, and a lot of people crash. You know, they are just laughing at us, but they don't understand that like we don't have the stuff that y'all have.
Yeah, if it doesn't snow that often, it doesn't make any sense. It's the same in England because we only get snow every few years. It only lasts a day or two, so it doesn't make sense for us to have all of that equipment. But it's the same, that happens and it just all shuts down.
Yeah, and everybody's like, y'all can't overcome this. It's like, we're just not equipped.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly.
I mean, it was crazy. Like, I think it was last winter in Texas. I think Texas is one of the states that has their own power grid.
Right.
And a lot of it's run by, like, the wind turbines. Mm. And it got so cold, the wind turbines froze up. And so Texas went without power for, like, a week or two.
I remember it dropped down really cold, didn't it? It never gets that cold in Texas.
Yeah. And wow. So, like, that really made them rethink, like, their energy and their power grids. Like, okay, we've got to do a better job if this ever happens again.
Yeah. Interesting.
Well, what about you got your brother coming over soon?
Yeah.
Is this going to be his first time in America?
First time in America.
So, I mean, what are you thinking? What are you going to show him? Are you going to let him call some shots, or are you going to just show him?
Well, it'll be a bit of both. I like, my favorite kind of trip is where you have a end point but no particular route. You can just
itinerary.
Yeah. And so he's flying in and out of New Orleans, and we just got 2 weeks to kill. We were going to do a loop around the South, start and end there, and just see where, you know, that's what's great about road trip. You can just say, do I want to take a left or a right?
Uh-huh.
It, you know, it's up to me.
Flip a coin.
Flip a coin, exactly. And yeah, we wanted to hit some juke joints and some blue spots, and
yeah, that'll be great, man. And hopefully he'll come over, you know, with his preconceptions and stereotypes, or you know, whatever else, and you know, you'll have that little mind blown, you know.
Yeah, and I'm hoping that, you know, I think a lot of people, they might go to New York or LA or San Francisco first, and then if they come back, they'll maybe go somewhere a little, you know, somewhere in the middle. But so him coming here first, I kind of wonder what that will do for his perception of it, and then if he ever goes,
yeah, to New York, or
yeah. You know, I remember someone saying, I can't remember who it was, that like Mississippi is the most American of the states in some ways.
I've heard that said. It's one of the most conservative states in the Union.
Really?
And, like, more left-leaning people in politics say that it's kind of caught in the Stone Age. I mean, that's what conservatism is, right? It's, like, trying to keep everything the same.
Right.
And so it's, like, with breweries for beer, the laws have just recently loosened up here in Mississippi, and some of the best beer is made in the state. There's a lot of great breweries in like Hattiesburg and down in Biloxi. A lot of great breweries. And I mean, Alabama is the twin state.
Right.
Same thing. It's, they say it's lost in the Stone Ages. It'll never catch up. But I mean, we're about to have legal marijuana for medical use.
Okay.
I mean, slowly but surely.
Yeah.
Small steps.
Yeah. No, it is. And I think you do find people, you know, especially after COVID, people moving out of big cities and seeking out places with a lower cost of living and huge, you know.
It's been very interesting seeing that from the small town I'm from in Alabama.
Yeah.
There has been people from the north.
Say goodbye to your credit card rewards. Greedy corporate mega stores, led by Walmart and Target, are pushing for a law in Congress to take away your hard-earned cash back and travel points to line their pockets. The Durbin-Marshall credit card bill would enact harmful credit card routing mandates that would end credit card rewards as we know it. If you love your credit card rewards, tell your lawmakers, hands off my rewards. Tell them to oppose the Durbin-Marshall credit card bill.
For the ones who work hard to ensure their crew can always go the extra mile, and the ones who get in early so everyone can go home on time, there's Grainger, offering professional-grade supplies backed by product experts so you can quickly and easily find what you need. Plus, you can count on access to a committed team ready to go the extra mile for you. Call, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
Coming from big cities, that, you know what, I can come to this little town, buy a house for a fraction of the price what it would cost there, and I can retire,
right?
And I can do what I want to do, and I just hope like the word don't get out on that too much, you know?
Yeah. Well, it's a mix, isn't it? Because you kind of, in some ways, having fresh blood and fresh ideas and fresh money can be a good thing, but also it then can change the character of an area, and
make for better or worse, right?
Locals can get pretty frustrated by it.
And that one guy I was telling you about, like when he moved, he's got an obsession with those old Volkswagen vans, and so not only did he buy a home, he bought a warehouse too, and he filled that warehouse up. He's got like 13, and I'm like, my God, man, you were just sitting on a gold mine, because everyone loves those things, you know. Very iconic.
Yeah.
Ryan's got one, Munson.
Yeah, in fact, we did that interview in his van.
Did you?
Yeah.
Great.
Yeah.
We used to do festivals and shows out of that thing, and oftentimes the people would come up to us not really interested in the product. They were trying to buy the van.
Interesting.
Because we would work out of it.
Yeah.
And then if it was a two-day festival, I mean, you'd pop the top, and you, one guy sleep up top and the other one sleep down low.
That's great. I had a fantasy about wanting to get a van like that and build a little podcast studio in it and just drive around.
Wouldn't that be great?
That would be a, and then if you could build an audience and have the branding on the side of it, wherever you go, people would then be like, shit, he's in my town. I'll just email him and say I've got a good story. And
And like with the kind of covers that you and I do, I mean, like, that's the kind of people that you want to attract. Yeah, anyway, right?
Yeah, talking to real people. It's yeah, that would be very cool.
That would be quite the dream. I mean, that's one thing that I'm working on now is there's a very interesting podcast that recently come out, The Alabama Astronaut.
Okay.
It's by my friend Abe Partridge. He spent his pandemic, that 2-year period, in North Alabama, up to West Virginia, with snake handlers.
Wow.
And it's not about the religion, it's about their music.
Mm.
And I would argue it's more rock and roll than a lot of rock and roll is today.
Really?
And so that album is about to come out, but that whole podcast is about Abe's journey. He had a little field recorder.
Wow.
Just going around to these different churches and telling these people stories.
That's fascinating. What's it called? Alabama Astronaut.
That's right.
Okay.
Yeah, check that out, man. And that's kind of like what Abe did. It's that kind of idea of what you kind of do, you know? Like,
yeah.
You got your field recorder and...
Yeah.
You sit down and like, all right, let's talk about this.
Yeah. Just going into a community and just experiencing it.
Mm-hmm.
There was a book I read last year. I think a couple of people here have told me about it as well, called Dispatches from Pluto.
Okay.
Which is about, it's a true story from about 5-6 years ago about this English guy that was living in New York, and he bought an old plantation house in the Delta and moved down with his girlfriend. And it's just about him trying to sort of restore this old house but assimilate into the community.
Mm-hmm.
And I just love those things where someone just comes in and, you know.
Yeah, that's a real cool
story. You may
story.
As well be an alien in a different place.
Oh, absolutely.
I think that's the interesting thing for me as well, is that I think English-speaking countries think, well, they're linked by the language. Mm-hmm. So I think England and America often think, oh, well, we have a lot in common because of that. But there's a lot of cultural stuff that you then realize, man, we really are very different in some ways, but we speak the same language. And so that's why it's, I think, it just works particularly well, because I thought about, well, I do want to do a series where I would go somewhere like Italy or France. Mm-hmm. But the thing is, I think you restrict yourself because people that speak English are inherently going to be slightly skewed because they speak English.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you're not going to get the equivalent of going out to a bar in the middle of nowhere.
And being able to speak French or Italian.
Yeah, where maybe someone, you know, they're going to be educated to a point that they're going to have learned English and be a little bit more international. And there's something very unique about going somewhere where you have a shared language, because you can talk to anyone no matter the background.
Yeah. You can always tell the accent too. Like, I had a friend here on the show, he goes by Frenchie. Mm. He's from France.
All right.
And he came to America 20-25 years ago. He's a guitarist and a singer, and he would end up running into some fairly big names of, like, Shooter Jennings, Waylon Jennings' son.
Okay.
And they would play rock and roll bands together. And now he's, like, based outside of, like, the Dallas-Fort Worth area. And
wow.
He's got him a blues band. And, like, it's so fun talking to Frenchie because, like, you know, you can tell, like, a French accent on English, right?
Mm.
It just comes out a certain way.
Yeah. Yeah.
Which, you know, it's... props to you, you know, because like when I speak Spanish, it sounds like a southern accent on Spanish, and I know that has to be hilarious,
right? Yeah. Yeah.
But I do know what you mean, man. It's like, even like, you know, South Africa, I mean, they speak English. Australia. Mm. You know, and I would love to cover some of those stories.
Yeah.
It's
there's a town that I've always been fascinated by in Australia. It's pretty much right in the middle, in the desert, called Alice Springs.
Uh-huh.
And I kind of want to do what I'm doing here, there, at some point, because it's just, you know, in the summer, which I guess is our winter, you know, it's like 115 every day.
Yeah.
But to just go into a community like that and live, and that would be very cool. Australia,
I've
New
always
Zealand.
Wanted to go to Australia, yeah. Too, and it's fascinating. Like, we have all the natural storms and disasters here,
yeah.
And it seems like every animal in Africa or in Australia wants to kill you.
Right, yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
one of the funniest videos like I saw was this kangaroo had a guy's dog, like had it wrapped around the neck.
Yeah.
And that dude walks out there and punches that kangaroo in the face and just kind of dazes it. And he lets the dog go, and then he's like squared up. I was like, I know you ain't about to fight a kangaroo. It's like, Australia's go hard.
It's funny. I can't remember who it was. I think it was Robin Williams once did a joke that ended up creating a whole international controversy, because he did a joke about how Australians were like English rednecks. And I know that's kind of unfair on them, but I could kind of see, because their accent is a bit, you know, I'm not going to try and do the Australian accent, but it's kind of a little bit like, it's kind of,
yeah,
you know, crosses over a little bit with that kind of redneck, whiny, weird, hot. And so he did a joke about that, and then Australia got mad at him. And then I think something like an Australian diplomat or prime minister said something like, you know, I think Mr. Williams should try visiting Alabama before he calls other people rednecks. And then the governor of Alabama was like, well, Prime Minister Australia, can,
why don't you come over here?
Yeah. Created some huge got a whole beef international debacle. Yeah. I thought that was really funny.
Yeah, Alabama does get it gets a bad rap. I know that, like, just on a world perspective, like, I think that is the capital of people thinking redneck.
Right. What was interesting, though, because I want to talk to you about this, and I've been trying to talk to some other people. I did this last night, and in Double D's as well, was I'd pitch up at these places, and they'd say, man, what are you doing here in some redneck bar? And I thought it was interesting they described themselves as a redneck, because I feel like that's often used as an insult towards other people.
Some people own it.
To own it, yeah. It's almost like, I'm going to call myself that before you do.
Mm-hmm. I'm going to go ahead and own up to it, yeah.
Yeah. It almost, I mean, I don't really want to draw the comparisons, but it almost felt a little bit like how some, not all, but some African-Americans adopted the N-word in their own community. And I kind of wondered if it was like rednecks doing the same thing of like, okay, here's this thing, you might call me that, well, I'm going to call myself that.
That's quite the observation. I think I'd agree with that. I think it would be that, because, I mean, just with the origin of the N-word, it was meant to be a put-down.
Yeah.
And then next thing you know is the culture picks it up, and then they just kind of, it's their word now.
Yeah, if we use it and we take the power out of it, then... Yeah.
Kind of turns it on its head.
Yeah.
That might be it.
I want to talk to some rednecks about that.
Yeah.
But
I'm from small town Alabama, and I've been called a redneck a lot because of where I'm from, but I would never really identify as like being a redneck. I mean, look at me, I got a computer.
You've got shoes.
Yeah. I've got shoes. I mean, I'm well on my way.
Yeah. No, it's interesting, and yeah, it is. Or it's just the self-awareness, I guess, people have as well.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, but that is wild. Like, they called it what it was. That's how they described it, their own place.
Yeah.
Jeez. Because, like, you know, when I think about Muddy Waters, I kind of think of that as, like, it's the redneck bar in town.
Mm.
Or even, like, you know, when I think about the Princess, you know, it's more inclusive to all walks of life.
Mm.
Munson draws a certain crowd. It's right. Like you're, I think, more creative types.
And, yeah.
I think Enneagrams, eights, like the real creatives,
yeah,
and the business-minded.
Yeah, it's...
So each place kind of draws its own...
I think it's often, because also I think redneck has that connotation with being, I don't know, like, guns and trucks and I don't know, that's the stereotype.
Yeah.
But often you meet those people and it's like, well, I do have a truck and I do like shooting, so
yeah
I'll call myself a redneck.
It's fine with me.
Yeah. it's been interesting for me because I've met a lot of people in Columbus, and you know, a town, even a sort of smaller town in rural Mississippi is going to have a different view to the people in the countryside. So I'm trying to get the full perspective because, you know, the town is going to be one aspect and the country will be the other. But it's been a bit harder to find those people or find them willing to do interviews, you know.
Yeah, that's what I was wanting to tell you about Michaels on the east side of Columbus. Mm. And so traditionally that would be a motorcycle bar.
Right.
So you would definitely get like a different piece of Columbus because there is a motorcycle community here in town.
Really?
Mm-hmm. And also it's like a sport bar where you can go to watch your sports or you can shoot pool, darts.
Mm.
And so a lot of different walks of life hang out there.
Mm. I sometimes wonder if people are just more guarded about saying what they think, is like, especially if you have a microphone, they think you're going to misrepresent them or you're going to put it out of context. And you know, I get it. It's
one thing that I've been really trying to do, like, you know, I'll leave the coughs most of the time, but like I don't really edit anything. Just let it all go.
Yeah.
Let it all stand.
Yeah.
Because when you get to chopping and screwing with a conversation, you really can. You can make it.
You can, yeah, really change the whole tone of it and what people meant by it. And I found that's a trick because I do edit mine down, but then I'll send it to people before I put it out and say, look, are you cool with this? Yeah, have I? And often people will say, oh, but, you know, there was something else I added. Could you put that back in for the bit of context? And I will, because I don't want people to feel like I've misrepresented them. And if they say they don't want to use it at all, I won't put it out. You know, it's...
Yeah. What have you found, like, just within Columbus or, like, going in and out to those rural areas, like, just with... have you seen any racism just open?
There was one bar I went to where... Yeah, I mean, I overheard a conversation, and they were throwing around the N-word, and I was like, feels... Yeah, this felt very uncomfortable.
Yeah.
And that was the kind of extent of it. Maybe, you know, it's more, maybe there's more, it's more polished. Maybe there could have been people I've met that might, you know, have those feelings and they haven't shown them to me. But it seems to so far in Columbus have been pretty good.
Yeah.
And
it's a predominantly black town.
Really?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And I was talking to someone about, I've just been walking around exploring, and some people would say, well, I wouldn't go down to that part of town if I were you. And everyone's been really nice so far.
I take that with a grain of salt because, you know, whether it's daytime or nighttime, I like to walk the streets. I don't really have a street that I avoid.
Yeah.
I think a lot of it is like your demeanor and
how you treat people.
Yeah. I think if you come off like maybe you feel a little paranoid or maybe you kind of seem like you're worried, you're kind of opening yourself up to something that may not have been.
Yeah, but if you,
because I mean, people can read people, you know.
Yeah, but if you smile and you wave and you ask people how they're doing, I think it diffuses a lot of tension.
Yeah,
I have found it's interesting that if it's just people I've been talking to or people who are drawn to me, but I've met a lot more progressive people here than conservative people.
Mm-hmm.
And I know that there must be conservative people about. I mean, I looked at the sort of, out of curiosity, the election map before I came. You know, it seems fairly 50-50. But yeah. I don't know if it's just that conservative voices are more guarded now or if that's a sign that...
I think they do feel that way.
The town is becoming more left-leaning. I don't know.
I think that... conservatives, they are a lot more guarded, especially on social media. Especially with like everything that we're beginning to find out about the Twitter files that Elon are releasing, like it was on both sides of the political spectrum, but it did seem to lean heavier toward attacking the right. And so like even in public now, I do believe like conservatives are they hold their cards very close to their chest. And I think they feel like they have to. I think they feel persecuted.
Right.
Whether that's real or not, I couldn't say. I don't know if I believe it, but I would say that they certainly feel that way.
It's interesting. But it's also interesting that they feel more guarded. I don't know if that's a sign. You could say that's they feel more attacked or that they feel more... That train.
She's going in there. We'll give it a minute.
Yeah. Time is about. We think that the worst thing you might think of. I don't know.
Yeah. Well, there you have it. You have the train, downtown Columbus. We're catching a little bit of everything. We got the rain. We got the train. But yeah, I do believe like they feel like they have to hold their cards closer to their chest.
Mm. And I wonder if that's a symptom of either them feeling just more broadly kind of under more scrutiny, or if it's just a sense that, you know, 30, 40 years ago, they'd feel like, okay, my town is predominantly going to agree with me, so I can say what I feel, but now it's changed a bit, so now I've got to be more...
Yeah, I'm a minority.
Watch
now.
What I'm going to say.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's been interesting, like, it's something that I've kind of been paying attention to as I go out, just within the nightlife. And this ain't really like a political left-right thing, but it is like... One thing I have noticed, and I think it's been true for all time, but I've specifically since I've been paying attention lately, is that it seems like the women are really, really into like a very masculine man, right. And like the more, and I don't mean it negatively, it's just how it is. Those guys are more alpha, where they're not really attracted to like a beta type. Like right. They really want like they want a man, you know.
Right.
And that's been interesting to see because I think men, especially here in America, have been emasculated for years. 85% of divorces are filed by women here. And I've been real curious about, like, when I'm out and about and just seeing how things shake out with people trying to hook up and, like, what are they into and... What attracts them and what do they find repulsive and just feeling all that out.
Interesting. Because
it's the dating pool and the nightlife is very interesting in this town to me. I have not figured it out. And I've been here for most of my life.
God, you could do a whole series just on that, really. Dating in a... in a small town.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, it's not... I don't think it's a hard thing to do. I think all you have to do is ask, but...
Yeah.
Maybe it's that cards being held real close to the chest. People send mixed signals or... I don't know.
Yeah, well, I feel like especially in a town where it's mixed, it's like a little dance you do with everyone. You're sort of figuring out where people stand on different issues. And usually it just seems it's best you don't ever address anything.
Yeah.
Because otherwise you risk, you know, it's not a huge place. You risk burning a bridge or being awkward with someone then.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's definitely a dance.
Yeah.
With that. I think it's important to have those conversations, though, even if you don't agree.
Yeah.
But it's getting to a point to where it's really hard to have those conversations. It's almost like the politics has become like the religion.
Mm.
And it's the politicians is the altar that they worship at. I don't know.
Mm.
It's very, I don't like it.
Mm.
But I mean, I guess that's just kind of where we are with, in the culture right now.
Mm.
It seems to me that America is leaving, I guess Christian roots would be a way to put it. It's kind of going more secular.
Mm.
And I mean, I think if a culture walks away from a belief in God, you have to fill that belief with something.
Right. And what do you think it's being filled with?
I think politics.
Okay.
I think identity politics. I think that's why like there's a lot of violence in the streets, and I think a lot of it is politically motivated. Not here. But if you hop on like Twitter or some social media with these street journalists, I mean, especially during like the election season, I mean, like there were people just being shot in the back of the head just because of their political beliefs.
Wow.
Minding their own business. They weren't even out like protesting. They were just, there's one, get him. Boom, you know.
Wow.
It's pretty wild. Mm. With like the Antifa and Proud Boys and all these different factions that are...
Yeah, I mean, I haven't followed it closely, you know, enough also been into American politics. Mm-hmm. But
I think it's a spectacle of the world. Like a lot of people, like not from here, are very interested in our politics. It's very interesting.
Yeah. Yeah.
I didn't care anything about politics until Donald Trump.
Right.
It kind of woke me up until I was like, man, this guy's a bull in a china shop.
You really? Know?
He's like shaking things up. This guy is a disaster. it was interesting, like seeing how many people that broke over like his time in leadership. Mm. Very, very interesting time in American history. I'm wondering, like in 20, 25 years, when they start writing about it in the books, like if I'm going to remember it differently than what they say it was.
Right. Yeah. Yeah, it's it always feels like when you're in the middle of something, whether it's as much of a turning point as you feel like it is.
Right.
If you feel the world right now feels like it's on in some shift, but I don't know if every generation feels like that they've gone through that.
Yeah.
It's like war in Ukraine and you know, politics is so polarized and. I don't know. You know, as you said, like it shouldn't be this warm now. Like the weather is changing, and it feels like you're on the cusp of some turning point. But maybe everyone feels like that
at some point in their life.
Yeah,
yeah.
And maybe it's just waking up. You know, I'm 32, and maybe that's around the age you just become a bit more aware of what's going on in the world.
I think social media kind of throws a lot of gas on that fire to where you're a whole lot more aware of things going on throughout the world that you would never hear about.
Mm.
And I think that's kind of a black pill. You know, that's kind of a pill of doom that it brings you down. It kind of depresses you a little bit when you see just how despicable things can be.
Yeah.
But on the white side, on the hope side of it, is like, there's a lot of good out there too.
Mm. I do think, yeah, social media is just, you just scream at people that you could actually have a conversation with, and
that's one thing that especially like Facebook is like typically people that I know, and if they post something that I don't typically agree with, I'll just keep moving. Because, like, how many people's minds have you changed by getting in an argument on your social media? Mm. Zero. Mm. You know? Like, man, you totally changed my mind with that comment. No, it doesn't work that way.
Yeah.
People double and triple down.
Mm.
And then you get heated. So, like, I think, like, maybe you see the post, and maybe next time you see them out in public, maybe have a conversation about it.
Right.
But it's... back to what we were saying, it seems it's very hard to have those kind of conversations.
Yeah.
To find some kind of middle ground.
Yeah. I can't remember who it was that was talking about, I mean, pretty almost all debates, whether it's social media, whether it's, you know, like the presidential debates they have, that, who was it? It might have been someone, it was a comedian, but they were saying, almost what was the point in having those first debates when it would have been, I guess it would have been Trump and... I can't even remember. Was it Trump and Hillary? No, was it... No, it was Trump and...
Biden.
Biden?
In 16, it was Trump and Hillary.
Trump and Hillary, and then it was...
And then in 2020, it was Biden.
But, like, who is Trump watching those debates going, well, that's a good point, but then on the other hand, it's like, you made your mind up the moment they announced.
Yeah.
And so...
Yeah. What's the point of even doing it?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Who's there with their notepad going, well, that's a good one.
I think it's more for like the independents, the people who are not blue or red. Like,
right.
There, I mean, and there are people who, you know, well, I don't know. But I think that is the population of the vote that typically swings the country one way or the other. So, I mean, those people and their votes are very important.
Mm.
So that would be the... And I'm talking like 15% of the population. You know, you're not, but they do exist.
Yeah.
But that comedian does have the point because most people already have their mind made up.
Mm.
And you could be like a polished turd running against a ham sandwich. And like, I'm taking a turd. I don't like ham sandwiches, you know?
Yeah.
And it would be that polarizing.
Yeah.
So. I don't know, it's curious just to see where it all leads.
Hmm.
But I mean, like you said, it's That whole Russia-Ukraine thing, I mean, that's affecting the whole world. I'm very curious to see how Europe's going to be this winter with, the natural gas or however they're going to heat their homes to stay warm.
Yeah.
I'm very concerned about that.
It's below freezing at home now. It's snowing. And I mean, I think we're a little more insulated from it. But, Poland, they had a big shut off the gas from Russia, didn't they? And now they're bombing power stations in Ukraine.
Mm-hmm.
I think, I think it was the UN or someone had said, like, that's considered a war crime because you're just purposefully trying to deny people ability to heat their homes when it's sub-freezing. I mean, that can kill an awful lot of people.
Yeah. Quicker than a bullet, too.
Mm.
That was so strange to me, like, the timing of that. It's like we were just, as a world, getting over a worldwide COVID pandemic.
Mm.
You know what a really cool thing would be? Let's go to war. Let's let that pop off.
Yeah.
What a time to be alive.
Yeah. What a cheery thing to...
Yeah. Well, man, we have covered quite a bit of ground. I got three more questions for you to walk it out the door.
Okay.
Question number one is, where can people find your work as far as the podcast? And or if do you do any kind of photography and, like, you're showing, like, a little bit of your journey online?
I mean, I'll put the odd thing on Instagram that is Off the Beaten Jack.
Okay.
Is the name of the show and the name of the Instagram, I think. I should double check that. I think that's right. Yeah, and then the podcast, you can get anywhere you get your podcasts, Spotify, iTunes, most common, Off the Beaten Jack. And or on the website, it's the same.
Right on.
Get it there. Yeah.
All right. Question two is, what has been the most surprising thing to you about Columbus since you've been here?
That's a good question. Most surprising thing. The parade. The Christmas parade.
Oh, you enjoyed that?
I did not think a town that was fairly small would have such a huge parade.
We watched that. My friend, he has a downtown apartment. And so we watched it from his window at his apartment.
I mean...
And it was the first time that I had watched the Columbus Parade in years, and it was a lot bigger than I thought it was going to be.
Marching bands, soldiers,
mm-hmm.
fire trucks, people in their cars.
Yeah.
I was.
Oh, you had Miss Columbus?
I had Miss Columbus, had the mayor mm-hmm. driving down there, and I was thinking, it's like, that's, I suppose, if you have such a huge military, is that... when people are not serving overseas, you have this huge force of people that can be called on to do things. And part of that is mm-hmm. marching down Main Street at a parade.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's our Army Reserves and National Guard.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So that surprised me. I thought it'd be a kind of pretty humble little thing, but that was...
That's fire trucks and police cars. It's the whole works. If you want to see a little humble little parade, you ought to see my hometown's parade. If you walked in the opposite direction, it could be over in about 30 seconds.
Wow.
Very small thing. Which, where I'm from, it's like a little over 300 people.
Really? What's it called? It's
Kennedy.
Kennedy, Alabama. Mm-hmm. All right.
I graduated with 26 people in my class.
Wow.
We knew each other very well.
Mm.
It's like brothers and sisters. All right. Last question to walk it out of the door. What was your favorite part about this interview?
Oh, good question. Actually, it's probably before we even hit record, you gave me that recommendation for a Duke joint.
Oh, yeah.
The Blue Front Cafe?
Yeah.
Is that right?
Yeah, down in Bentonia.
Yeah.
Yeah, go meet Jimmy, man. He's always there, and so that's kind of like the Monson and Brothers of mm-hmm. Bentonia. It's a hub for people mm-hmm. to hang out. It's a place where the community gets their news.
Mm.
It's where they get their, you can get groceries there. If you need flour to make bread, or if you want to come in and have a cold drink, or, if you need candy for the kids, or it's a little place to come get some groceries. And then, Thursday, Friday, Saturday night, it's a good place to go and hear some blues.
Well, I can't wait.
Yeah, man.
Yeah, I need to find, because he's coming in on the 29th, my brother. And we were thinking, do we want to stay in New Orleans?
They're doing their Christmas party this weekend.
Oh, really?
Saturday.
Nice. Because we were going to think we could have New Year's Eve in New Orleans, but then we thought it would be fun to, I think, almost go to a small town and go to somewhere.
I think either way you play that, you'll have a blast. I think New Year's Eve on Bourbon Street would be quite the experience.
Yeah, we'll have to give some thought to it. Yeah.
All right, Jack, thank you so much.
No, thank you, Alan. It's been a pleasure.
Say goodbye to your credit card rewards. Greedy corporate mega stores, led by Walmart and Target, are pushing for a law in Congress to take away your hard-earned cash back and travel points to line their pockets. The Durbin-Marshall credit card bill would enact harmful credit card routing mandates that would end credit card rewards as we know it. If you love your credit card rewards, tell your lawmakers, hands off my rewards. Tell them to oppose the Durbin-Marshall credit card bill.
Without the ones like you, who work tirelessly to keep things running, everything would suddenly stop. Hospitals, factories, schools, and power plants, they all depend on you. No matter the weather, emergency, or time of day, you're the ones who get it done. At Grainger, we're here for you, with professional-grade industrial supplies. Count on real-time product availability and fast delivery. Call, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.